Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Creeped, stories about supernatural occurrences, sightings, hauntings, and sometimes creepy people. Can you think of a time something happened that you couldn't quite explain? The first storyteller is Monique Bamani. Monique shares a story about a house that is worth the extra company.
My story begins the fact that my husband, me, my daughter, and my two dogs live in a haunted house. Now, most people think haunted house, they're like, okay, 1800s, big mansion, whatever, obviously haunted. Our house was built in 1969, 1970. It's a one-story, one-car garage, and the yard is about three times as big as our house. It is pretty nondescript. Well, we have stayed in this house because my grandmother, about a decade ago, she gifted us this house to me and my husband as our, you know, wedding gift. And she initially got this house in the 70s for the sole purpose of it being a rental property. So over the years, many families have lived there. Grandma's in her late 80s, and so she really can't tell me who has lived there before or say if anyone's died. But you know what? It was a free house. We have no mortgage. We're going to take it. So we first saw that things were a little different at our house about 6 months in. Me and my husband were putting up the Christmas ornaments, and some of them that we have have lights and music, right? So one of them, you know, we tested out. What's going on? It's a cute little jingle. And we're like, okay, let's turn this off. Save the battery. But it wouldn't turn off. It kept going and going, no matter what we did to try to finger with it. So, like any normal person would, I took the ornament and we had a German Shepherd in the yard at the time, just threw it in the yard and let the dog take care of it. We're like, okay, whatever, that's one off. About a year later, we had our daughter, and for those parents of young children, when the kids become toddlers and then all the toddler toys have batteries, and because the toys play music and the toys have noises and everything. So we got her this little cube toy, and it was in the playroom. We converted it for her. And one day we're eating lunch. The kitchen's next to this playroom, about 10 feet away. And it just starts playing out of the blue. And there's no one in the room. We're the closest we are, again, is about 10 feet away. And we're like, all right, maybe it'll just start falling us down at some point. 5 hours later, it is still going. So we decide, let's close this door. And then we'll get rid of it after it stops ringing. The spirit also that we've nicknamed Ghost Child, since it tends to like little musical toys, we bring home a little toy steering wheel for her. And it's one of those like Maggie from The Simpsons has, right, in the previews. And super cute, you know, test it out, play it for her a bit. Just, again, same thing, try to turn it off. It doesn't turn off. This time I'm like, all right, I'm going to take the batteries out. This has got to work, right? Batteries come out. And it's still playing. So my baby, she's all like, mommy, mommy, can I play with it? And I'm all like, baby, we can't let you play with a toy that is still going with no batteries. So that goes into the donation bin. Again, on this theme of musical things, you know, she grows up a little bit. So about 2 years ago, It's about 8:39 p.m. She is stalling, like does not want to go to sleep. And so we're in the kitchen. The Alexa's in the kitchen. And all of a sudden, we start hearing this little jaunty, like, pirate tune play from Alexa, like, sung by a little boy. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. My husband must be, like, trying to encourage us to get to bed by playing a song on the Alexa. I had to finish his, go, you know, talk to my husband in the bedroom. I'm like, what was the name of that song? That was super cute. He's like, what song? Like, the one that you were just playing in the kitchen. He's like, I didn't play anything. I was just scrolling on his phone. And so I go in the kitchen, ask Alexa, play a last song. And it says, sorry, there is no record. Like, oh, man. We could not get rid of Alexa, so she's still there. And then just a couple years ago, you know, the spirit seems to be a little bit more mischievous, right? So Saturday morning comes along. My husband decides to take my daughter out to the front yard and play, letting me sleep in. I get a text. Ignore it. I get a call from him, and he's like, come unlock the front door. So to preface this, we have a front door, and then we have a screen door, right? The screen door, we've lost that key 2 months after we bought it, about 8 years ago. So we have, it does not lock, right? You know, I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, shuffle out of bed, you know, one eye open here, unlock the door. And he's all like, why did you lock the door? It is Saturday morning. I am sleeping in. I do not have both my eyes open right now. Why would I go and lock the door? So we don't know who locked the door. But one other time, just last year, also around this time of year, ghost child, again, prankster, I'm sure. We have this wall in our kitchen, and it is, you know, dining room. It has a huge, heavy antique mirror. It has paintings. It has portraits, calendar, and a clock. The clock is, again, nondescript, like from Amazon, right? Well, one night, it falls down. Nothing else on the wall has moved at all. I'm like, okay, whatever. Someone must have bumped the wall. It, whatever, just put it back up. Second night, falls down again. And I'm like, okay, again, benefit of the doubt. Maybe my daughter did something. I don't know. And only the clock fell. Third night, this part of the story my husband had to remind me about. We hear the clock fall. I go over and look at the wall and I see, okay, obviously no clocks there, but we don't see it on the floor. My husband's looking everywhere for it. Finally, he goes into the playroom on the far wall, about 12 to 15 feet away from where the wall for the clock was on. And there's the clock on the floor. And I'm thinking, gravity doesn't work that way. So I get so freaked out. Bought a new clock from Walmart with the old clock, get the old clock down, get out my sage, like it's in the storage room here, to help cleanse the space, light the sage. Sage it, sage it. Sage my husband, sage my daughter, have them sage me, sage the rest of the house. And that goes in the trash pile. So now, again, we still live in this house because we have no mortgage. And if anything happens again, we'll just buy more sage. Thank you.
With the price of housing nowadays, what's an extra tenant? I mean, they own it. Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 80/20foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Bob Carnes. Bob shares a story about a day he is likely to never forget. Trigger warning, this story discusses acts of violence.
In the summer of 1966, I was 23 years old. I was a year out of the Navy and a student at the University of Texas in Austin. I had a part-time job as a switchboard operator, a night switchboard operator for the TV station, one of the TV stations, KHFI, which was the, the NBC station. I was a switchboard operator, but the real newsman had taught me how to shoot film because they were tired of going to rubber chicken dinners. In Austin, there was a lot of those. But on the morning of August 1st, I was headed to work, but I was having to go a circuitous route because there were blockades and I heard a bunch of sirens. There was something going on. I decided it had to be a big fire somewhere. And when I got to the station, I found out that there was a sniper on the tower at the University of Texas, and he was shooting people. And as it happened, all the newsmen were out of pocket, either out of town. One of them was actually trapped in the tower. So they gave me a camera and gave me a bunch of film and said, go take some film. I got outside and there was a car going down there, a news unit, with some people from the station. I don't know what they were about, but I had them take me up San Antonio on the west side of the campus, about one block off of Guadalupe, the drag. They put me out behind the co-op, and I went up across the drag. I was conscious of being visible to the tower from there. There was nobody on the drag, which was very odd. I went up the intercampus drive, and the intercampus drive goes to the south side of the tower. Between the drive and the tower, there's a mall, a concrete open area, and then a set of steps coming down to the drive. On the way there, I could hear big shots, which were coming from the tower. I could hear a bunch of other people shooting, but they were obviously 22s and shotguns, or just absurd. But about three quarters of the way up to where I was going to end up, I saw some activity on the left side. I turned and I took film of that, what was going on. It turned out to be a policeman that had been shot. I found out he didn't make it, but I went on up. And just before I got to the steps, I sat up below the balustrade, and there was an oak tree above us, and I figured I was safe. I found out later that's exactly where the policeman had been when he got shot. There were some other people up there, but the one I remember most was a nurse. She told me she was a nurse. And she told me that, there have been multiple people shot, some killed for sure, as far away as 19th Street, which that's almost an incredible shot, and then a lot of them on the drag and then other places too. On the mall, on the concrete area, there were people laying there that had been wounded. And I can't conjure a picture of how many there were anymore, but backing up, it must be like six or seven people laying out on the mall. And she, the nurse, wanted to go help them. But I told her, there's no sense having another victim out there, And I think I'd heard that somewhere in the Navy, something like that. But I thought then that maybe I was telling her that because if she went out there, I was going to have to go too. And I didn't want to go out there. But, for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour, I was shooting what was going on around me. And I used up a lot of film. a 100-foot roll was 3 minutes of film. And I think I shot 10 rolls, but I'd have to go back and find that out for sure. While we were there, another guy came up, and there was a hero. He was a hero, and the only one I saw that day. He was a ginger-haired guy, kind of overweight. He was really sweaty. I gave him the same thing about not being a victim. He told me he had already pulled people out on other places, and he had a couple of guys with him. So he started going up there and pulling people off. And I filmed all of that. And the one I remember most was a tracking shot. They left me here. They went up the stairs and ran out, and they got this young woman. She was in a green summer, one of those cotton dresses, you know. They brought her out, and they put her right at my feet. It was like I directed the shot or something. I found out later she died, and then the child that she was carrying as well. These guys got him off, but the last man was a big guy, like 300 pounds in a suit. I heard later that he was trying to get a job as a professor. But they came off, and they dropped him on the steps, on the stairs. And they were spent. You could see the, you know. So I handed the camera to the nurse, and I ran out to get the guy. And another person came with me. If I'd have been a real newsman, the name of the guy with the red-haired guy and the nurse, they would be known quantities nowadays. But I didn't know to do that. I didn't know to get names and find out, try to interview them later or anything like that. I did learn that later on in my career, but I ran out there, me and the other guy, picked this 300-pound man up, and he felt like he was a featherweight. When we ran over, all this time you were thinking that you were going to be shot. I found out later that it wasn't a hippie, which is what we thought it was. It was a guy very much like me, almost the same age, had been in the service the same amount of time. And they found out later he had a pecan-sized tumor in his brain. And he's a troubled person. But anyway, I went and looked, couldn't get it back there. Took the film back to the station. They developed it. They didn't bother editing it. They just cut off the bad ends, spliced it together, and put it on a reel. The station manager, Dan Love, was out, and he was on camera, and they were talking about what was going on. And he was about to sign off, and then he said, wait a second. He said, I've just heard that one of our young newsmen, Bob Carnes, shot some film. And so they started running the film, and he was going to comment on it. And he watched the opening shot, and he said, son of a bitch. And then he couldn't talk after that. And that's the only film that was shot. So if you've ever seen any film from that incident, it was my film. And that's it.
What a tremendous story. Thank you for sharing it with us.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit getcreativesanantonio.com.
Our next storyteller is Cynthia Harrington. Cynthia shares a story about a place that she rented that was already occupied.
So I was very excited, my first apartment after college. Moved in with a good friend of mine. It was a great time of life. We found this place that was a 1940s original apartment on a street with buildings that look just like ours. Three-story brick buildings with two apartments on each floor, lovely sun porch in the front, and one of those, it had an exit to the back with wooden stairs and landings. It was had some of the original features. We had wonderful oak floors. They were a little buckled, but lovely. Still the ceramic features in the bathroom, the light fixtures, with the little dongle on the bottom to turn it on and off. But we soon realized that our apartment was not like the other apartments on the street. It first started when I was hearing knocks on the door, and I would go to the door, and there was nobody there. It always happened when I was home alone, and so I couldn't validate it with Barry. I would go to the door, look out, think, my mind would explain, somebody upstairs, it was somebody across the hall. But when I shared it with Barry, he said, every time I come home, when you're not home, I have a feeling that there's someone in the apartment. I go into the kitchen and I open all of the cupboard doors, even ones where there was no possibility of a human being to be in. He said, I can just feel this presence. We got the apartment from some friends of his who had moved out, and we were very excited to get in there. They were two moms and two kids, so there was always someone home. We called them and we said, this is happening. Did you have any experiences like this? And they said, no, but the people upstairs would have their piano start playing in the middle of the night. And sometimes their bike, where they put it in the hallway, would end up in one of the bedrooms. We said, thanks a lot. we've got a year's lease. So we're thinking it's not, maybe it'll go away. It's not hurting anything. One day I was getting ready for work, and I had the back bedroom with the window out onto the landing, and I could leave it open. We had this wonderful cross breeze that would go all the way through to the sun porch. In the spring and the fall, the leaves or the curtains would move in and out with the breeze, like the building was breathing. So I was getting ready for work. I had the window about half open, and a black cat shot through the window and onto the bed, hackles up, ready to fight. There was something in the apartment, in the bedroom, that it was going after. I freaked out. Why would this cat choose my window that looked like every other window on the block to come into? So I picked it up, threw it out. At this point, I'm just unnerved. Again, we decide, well, it's not hurting anything. That might have been a coincidence. Takes a long time to get our minds around something was happening, but it wasn't there. So one Sunday, I'm luxuriating in bed, coffee, newspaper. I probably was dozing off, waking back up again. I distinctly heard the apartment door open. I distinctly heard the apartment door close and the deadbolt latch. I distinctly heard someone creep across with the floor with its very identifiable creaks, and then nothing. Well, he might just be sitting quietly in the sunroom, but half an hour went by and another 15 minutes went by, and I thought, nah, something's wrong. So I called out. Nothing. I went out. There was no one there. I called him. I said, what's going on? Did you come? Did you leave? He said, no. We've steeled ourselves at this point to staying there. We've reasoned out it only happens when we're there alone. So it's probably a playful ghost that is friendly and wanting to play, looking like he's doing the ghost. He, she is trying to just get our attention. And we've reasoned this out a little bit and kind of settled down until one night at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and the bathroom light is on, And I thought, I'm home alone. Barry has a boyfriend, so he's gone. But I thought, well, there is one of the dongles that's a little bit loose. Could easily have just turned it halfway off and it flipped back on. So I go to the bathroom, half awake, sit down, look up. The other light is on. I could feel a presence. I thought, I am home alone in the dark with something that just turned this light on. So that was it. Never spend another night in the apartment. We did try and continue to validate, sort of like, is this really happening? And we found a ghost expert, invited her over. We told her the story. We showed her around the apartment. She's very, not like Ghostbusters at all, but just very, very calm, very reasonable. Because we're noticing this because we're trying to get some response from her. And we said, so what do you think? And she said, I will be fine as long as I get out of here. At that point, we said, okay, this is it. When we talked to the landlord, because we had to break the lease, we told him what was going on, and he said, are you telling me that this place is haunted? We said, that's exactly what we're telling you. And he said, okay, we'll break the lease. So I think he'd heard those stories before.
Let's face it, the landlord knew something was up. I'm glad Cynthia got out of her lease. Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
Our next storyteller is Tori Dominguez. Tori shares a story about My Little Pony fandom and the brony who couldn't take a hint.
So I was 17 when I started my freshman year at Rice University. I was always been a little younger than my peers because I skipped second grade. So when I get to the school, I'm moving from Corpus Christi to Houston. I know no one there. So I try to make friends, and I try to make friends at the anime club. If you don't know what anime is, it is cartoons from Japan. I have always been into everything geeky, movies, cartoons, anime, and even My Little Pony at the time, because there was... So in the anime club, there was the club president. He had the temperament and the dress sense of Hank Hill. So I'll call him Hank from now on. So Hank was a 23-year-old grad student studying physics. He was trying to get his PhD. And we got along well for about 2 years. It was great. I shortly after became the vice president of this club. He even started a new club. He started the Doctor Who Club because he loved Doctor Who, and he got me into Doctor Who. So we enjoyed that together. We would go to the bookstore. We'd go to the movie theater. We would go to anime conventions around town, and I even invited him back to my place back home so that we could go to a convention in my hometown. Everything was great until about my junior year. I needed to go to a showing of Death of a Salesman for my theater class, and he was willing to drive me because he had a car and I didn't even have a license. And when I got into the car, I saw him, and oh my God, his haircut was terrible that day. And he was awkwardly rubbing his steering wheel and asked, hey, I was kind of hoping this could be a date. And I didn't know what to say, so I'm like, okay, sure. So we watched the show, and it's great. But immediately after, I'm like, oh my God. I immediately regretted it because I'm not attracted to this man. I can't see myself kissing him. I can't see myself becoming his girlfriend. So I shouldn't be dating him. It's just simple as that, right? But I don't know how to tell him that 15 minutes after I said yes. So when we get out of the car, well, I get out of the car, and he drops me off. Everything went well. And I'm waiting for his car lights to leave. And I see them fading away, but then they come back. He's coming around in a circle. And I turn to look, and the headlights are just in my face. And he comes out, and he asks, "Hey, I've never done this before, but, oh, God, do you want to kiss?" And I said, "Oh, no, thank you. I'm just not ready." So that's the thing. That's what I said. I said, "I'm not ready." But what that implies is that someday I will be ready. So keep on my ass about it. And then, oh, our friendship got much more awkward after that. I tried to make it fun and friendly, like, these aren't dates, silly. You don't even pay for me. These aren't dates. We're just hanging out. We're just being buddies. Oh, did you see the new commercial for the Thor movie? It's so cute. They have Loki, and he's reading stories to a bunch of children, and one of the little girls says, "Thor's my favorite hero." So Loki pushes her over, but he's still hot, though, so it's funny. And he's like, "Oh, so that's what I got to do, huh? To get you to like me, I got to push over a child?" That is not why I told you that story. I was just trying to be funny. So one day, I just have to put a stop to it. At the time, we would use Facebook Messenger, like, all the time, especially to just decide, oh, where are we going to go? Oh, we're going to a brony board game night? Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, because we were both into My Little Pony at the time. My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, specifically. It's a great show. Weird Al Yankovic was actually on the show. He played a character, a supporting character. And so one day I just had to break it to him. I said, like, "Look, I know you're waiting for me to like you back. It's not going to happen, buddy. I'm not attracted to you." And so the message, Facebook messaging, turns into a phone call. And he calls me on the phone, and he is just blubbering. "I don't understand. Why won't you give me a chance? We went to your house. What was that about? I'm a nice guy. No one's even given me a chance before. No one could be bothered." It made the attraction level go from zero to the negatives. It was awful. And yet, I still wanted him to be my friend. So I didn't know how to break it off concretely, because I actually cared about being a bitch back then. I was already a tease. I couldn't be a bitch too. That's how you die. And then, so we just slowly weaned off of him. And, like, you know, we, at graduation, we went our separate ways. He now has a PhD in physics, and he's moving to another state. And I'm going home. I initially had pre-med dreams, but those sank. So now I'm in nursing school. You know, I'm still floating, still keeping afloat. So I think it's over. We're done. He's going away. We're parting ways. It's over. College is over. Until 2 years later, I get a message from him on Facebook. I haven't unfriended him, because unfriending is an act of war. And he just wants to tell me, "Hey, I know it's been a while. Haven't heard from you. How's medical school going?" And I just tell him, "Oh, medical school, you know, isn't happening. I'm going to do nursing school instead." He's like, "Cool, cool. I'm getting married, and I would like to send you an invitation." I'm like, "Oh, thank God. Someone else has agreed to marry this man. I'm free. Yes, I will accept an invitation. Here's my address." So he sends the invitation. Don't worry. Relax. So the invitation comes in the mail. It's a little paper TARDIS. It's cute. I open it up. I read the details of the woman who has the key to my chains. And it's all, and I'm like, "Oh, great. He's getting married." I don't go, but still, it was nice to be invited to the wedding. I think it's over. He's married someone else. And then 2 more years pass by. And I get a message from him on his phone. When I see the notification, I just get that sinking gross pit in my stomach, just seeing it. My day's ruined. I open it up to see, what could you possibly have to say to me after you're married? And he just wants to catch up. He's like, "Hi, how's it going? How's med school? I told you last time I'm not in med school anymore." But I don't even bother to tell him that. I just, when I realize I don't want to hear from him anymore, I just unfriend him, finally. I think it's over. And until 1 year later. After, in this 1 year time, he has sent a long text message to my best friend and my mother about how he's concerned that I unfriended him. And I told him I unfriended him on purpose. Why? Could it be that she's suicidal because she doesn't, because she didn't get into med school and now she's cutting off every friend she's ever had? This is the kindest woman I've ever known. This is like Mr. Rogers ignoring a child. Please check on her for me and tell me that her friend misses her. I couldn't. I was done with this man. So I finally just let it all out, saying, I haven't felt comfortable with you since I was 19. Get out of my life. And he's like, well, I just wanted to tell you that I was having a baby with my wife. And also, FYI, ghosting is cruel. But after that, I officially never heard from him again. But I did hear that My Little Pony ended and that Weird Al Yankovic's character that I mentioned had a baby with Pinkie Pie. So he's canonically has a little baby horse of his. And I'm telling you all that so that I never have to message this 30-year-old married doctor again.
Honestly, listening about My Little Pony bronies, kinda hot. That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Stay tuned for part two on the live event On the Theme Creep, streaming everywhere you stream podcasts, coming soon. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.